The stands of bamboo had disappeared, although it was evident that they would be quickly replaced. The bamboo had a phenomenal growth. Burton estimated that a 50-foot-high plant could grow from start to finish in 10 days. His gang had worked hard and cut down all they thought they would need for the boat, but they wanted to keep thieves away, so they used more wood to erect a high fence. This was being finished the same day that the model was completed. The trouble was that they would have to build the boat on the plain. It could never be gotten through the woods and down the various hills if it were built on this side. "Yeah, but if we move out and set up a new base, we'll run into opposition," Frigate had said. "There isn't a square inch of the high grass border that isn't claimed. As it is, you have to trespass to get to the plain. So far, nobody has tried to be hard-nosed about their property rights, but this can change any day. And if you build a ship a little back from the high grass border, you can get it out of the woods okay and between the huts, but you'd have to set up a guard night and day, otherwise your stuff will be stolen. Or destroyed. You know these barbarians." He was referring to the huts wrecked while their owners were away, and to the fouling of the pools below the cataract in the spring. He was also referring to the highly unsanitary habits of many of the locals. These wouldn't use the little outhouses put up by various people for the public. "We'll erect new houses and a boatyard as close to the border as we can get," Burton said. "Then we'll chop down any tree that gets in our way, and we'll ram our way past anybody who refuses us right away." It was Alice who went down to some people who had huts on the border between the plain and the hills and talked them into making a trade. She didn't tell anybody what she intended. She had known of 3 couples who were unhappy with their location because of lack of privacy. These made an agreement and moved into the huts of Burton's gang on the 12th day after resurrection, on a Thursday. By a generally agreed-upon convention, Sunday, the 1st, was Resurrection Day. Ruach said he would prefer that the first day be called Saturday, or even better, just First Day, but he was in an area predominantly Gentile, or ex-Gentile, but once a Gentile, always a Gentile, so he would go along with the others. Ruach had a bamboo stick on which he kept count of the days by notching it each morning. The stick was driven into the ground before his hut. Transferring the lumber for the boat took 4 days of heavy work. By then, the Italian couples decided that they had had enough of working their fingers to the bone. After all, why get on a boat and go someplace else when every place was probably just like this? They had obviously been raised from the dead so they could enjoy themselves. Otherwise, why the liquor, the cigarettes, the marijuana, the dream gum, and the nudity? They left without ill feelings on the part of anybody. In fact, they were given a going-away party. The next day, the 20th of year 1 AR, 2 events occurred, one of which solved one puzzle, and the other of which added one, though it wasn't very important. The group went across the plain to the Grailstone at dawn. They found 2 new people near the Grailstone, both of them sleeping. They were easily aroused, but they seemed alarmed and confused. One was a tall, brown-skinned man who spoke an unknown language. The other was a tall, handsome, well-muscled man with gray eyes and black hair. His speech was unintelligible until Burton suddenly understood that he was speaking English. It was the Cumberland dialect of the English spoken during the reign of King Edward I, sometimes called Longshanks. Once Burton and Frigate had mastered the sounds and made certain transpositions, they were able to carry on a halting conversation with him. Frigate had an extensive reading vocabulary of early Middle English, but he had never encountered many of the words or certain grammatical usages. John de Greystock was born in the manor of Greystoke in the Cumberland country. He had accompanied Edward I into France when the king invaded Gascony. There he had distinguished himself in arms, if he was to be believed. Later he was summoned to Parliament as Baron Greystoke, and then again went to the wars in Gascony. He was in the retinue of Bishop Antony Beck, Patriarch of Jerusalem. In the 28th and 29th years of Edward's reign, he fought against the Scots. He died in 1305 without children, but he settled his manor and barony on his cousin Ralph, son of Lord Grimthorpe, in Yorkshire. He had been resurrected somewhere along the river among a people about 90% early 14th century English and Scottish and 10% ancient Sybarites. The peoples across the river were a mixture of Mongols of the time of Kublai Khan and some dark people, the identity of which Greystoke didn't know. His description fitted North American Indians. The 19th day after resurrection, the savages across the river had attacked. Apparently they did so for no other reason than they wanted a good fight, which they got.